Are you ready, Alabama?
Hello? What, who's there? What's going on?
You're listening to our number two in the doghouse.
Whatever's happening here, just knock it off.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
These kids are weird, man. They're weird.
Live from the Big Dog Production Studios.
How you doing?
It's the Tom Abraham Show.
That might be listed in Revelations as the cause for the apocalypse.
Here he is, the head of the household, the Big Dog.
You're the smartest guy I've ever met.
Tom Abraham.
You want me to do this crap?
I guess I'm on here. Am I on? Can somebody respond?
And welcome back, hour number two to the Tom Abraham Show. Glad you are with us. Football Friday in the doghouse. We are short an hour due to Alabama basketball coming up. Pre-game starts at 5, so we'll have you right up until that. We do have a Friday trifecta for you. You can go ahead and get it. It's at the Facebook fan page, by the way, at Facebook.com/Tom Abraham Show. But what we got here for you is Wolverine Dan +6.5 at Badger Larry, LSU -15.5 at UT, the Eagles -3.5 at the Cowboys. That'll get you on a board with a point. And now here's the twist. For an additional point, a standalone point, we're going to Homestead for the NASCAR Championship. This is standalone. You get this point. Whether you hit the trifecta or not, you will get this point if you can just give us the champ. The 2 of Keselowski, the 4 of Harvick, the 19 of Kyle Busch, or the 78 of Martin Truex Jr. Joining us now, Josh Ward, SEC Insider, right here on the Woody Anderson Ford VIP Hotline. Josh, welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing well. Great to be with you.
You know, that's all strong NASCAR country where you are up there at the Sports Animal in Knoxville. But I am curious with the, you know, with the reduction in the viewership and so on and so forth, how has the interest diminished in your part of the woods? You guys get much NASCAR talk up there still?
Yeah, we do. I do a NASCAR show throughout the summer called
Nice.
The Laugh. We've done it for a long time and have a lot of fun. You know, it's just we're just down the road from Bristol, which is a huge deal. Of course, you get to this part of the year and college football takes over. But yeah, NASCAR does well, and there's really good local racing in East Tennessee. Dirt tracks up here. We talk a lot on the show about, you know, I'd love to see them lay some dirt down on Bristol again. I don't think that's going to happen, but you get out to a dirt track and you can see some really good entertainment.
Yeah, I'd love to see him back at the fairgrounds in Nashville. I thought they made a big mistake when they built that track that they built out in Lebanon. But I did the same thing as you. I hosted a show called Race Night with Tim Pacman. I don't know if you know Tim Pacman, but Tim used to be with NASCAR.com. He was with the Childress team, and now he's running a speedway up in upstate New York. But, yeah, I did that for years, so I'm a big gearhead from back in the day. I just wish, and I've said this over and over again, I can't watch it now. I mean, I just have a really hard time watching it now with all the football and everything else. And I think for the sake of the sport, the off season, the interest, the expense of the sport for the drivers and the teams and whatnot, I wish the playoff would start at Daytona in July, at the 4th of July race in Daytona, and they did the playoff in July and August and had the championship at Darlington. I wish that the Southern 500 was the finale. Homestead, it's Homestead. You know, I think Homestead should be right after Daytona. Then they go north, you know, cut some of these double tracks out that we go to. And I think they should end at Labor Day weekend and get it the hell off of my TV for football. And, you know, that's the only thing I wish they would do.
Selfishly, I agree with you. I think that would be great. It would be a nice one. It would provide some really nice entertainment and storylines in middle of the summer when things are really tough. You obviously still have the sport going on, but if you have the championship, you have the playoffs at stake, that's an even bigger deal. So,
right.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'm skeptical. I'm sure you are as well that would actually happen, but it would be a perfect send-off because NASCAR really gets lost in everything that's going on with football, college, and the NFL.
Well, and, you know, and the other part of it is, you know, now they're having a hard time putting 40 cars on a track. It used to be 43, and there'd always be cars going home. And so, you know, I think it would help with the expense. We're going to see less and less teams next year already. You know, three-car teams are becoming two. Two are becoming one. So I think it would help those guys in the pocketbook if they feel like it's so necessary to run into November like this. The other idea I had, and I know that it would suck for people who go to the races, but hell, half of these, you know, buildings are half empty anyway. What if they ran in the fall? What if they ran on like Wednesday night? They would own Wednesday night. What if you had Wednesday night racing right in the middle of the week and they ran, you know, like that? I think people would watch that. I know I would watch it.
Yeah, well, you think about the Mud Summer Classic, people sit down and watch that as well, and that's the middle of the week when that happens,
right.
And it gets good social media attention, which everybody's fighting for because that's what spreads conversation in a lot of ways. So it's not that would mean NASCAR catches the NFL or even the NBA or Major League Baseball, but could it create a little extra pop? Sure, and NASCAR could absolutely use that. I like NASCAR. I like the drivers. I think the sport could do a better job of getting its drivers in a position to interact with fans. I think they used to be a lot better there. And, you know, they have all these appearances that they do that they frankly don't want to. And it all adds up to be a problem, especially when you consider the competition it has to go up against. And everybody faces challenges because you have more entertainment options than ever before. So every sport's affected by that, but some sports are better at fighting that off than others, and NASCAR is one of the clear sports that's had problems because of that.
No question. SEC insider Josh Ward with us. All right, to the football. Terrible schedule. I mean, it's just an awful schedule around the league. You got teams playing JV games here right when the season's coming to a crescendo. We do have some games that are meaningful for different reasons. What do you think the odds would have been if like a year and a half ago we'd have said, man, I can't wait till when you get Ed Orgeron and Brady Hoke together, those two guys going at it. I mean, you know, I bet that's something we never thought we would say, right?
Yeah, we would have said that along the lines of, you know, so they can talk to each other pregame about defensive line battles, not so that they could be leading their teams against each other, LSU and Tennessee. And these are guys that have been head coaches in the past. Of course, Orgeron's in a full-time position right now at LSU, but he's been an interim a couple of times, both at LSU and at USC, and he's well known for his work as a defensive line coach. Brady Hoke is well known for his position as a defensive line coach. It also tells you where the programs are, that LSU made a change, and I don't think at the time when Les Miles was let go, the intention was, okay, to just hand it over to Ed Orgeron. That's what ended up happening. And Tennessee's not going to hand it over to Brady Hoke, but Tennessee's program, which has experienced a little more success over the last couple of years, is hit hard times again, and LSU's still trying to fight through and get back to the top of the West, which year in, year out at this point seems like a pretty big challenge.
Yeah. All right, so since the schedule is so weak, let's talk coaching carousel, because that is obviously on the top of a lot of people's list right now. First of all, before we get to some of the obvious things that are going on, Barry Odom, I thought that thing was dead in the water. That dude saved it, didn't he? I mean, don't you get the feeling right now that they're going to whack Vanderbilt and that be bowl eligible, and that Barry Odom has kind of pulled that thing out of the hopper, if it feels like, anyway?
Absolutely it does, and we need to see if it's going to close out that way. But during that five-game losing streak, I don't remember anybody talking about, you know whose chances of really getting things turned around and saving his job and getting the fans excited in the second half of the year, Barry Odom. Nobody was talking about that. And all of a sudden, the offense has lit up not only the weak non-conference teams, but a team like Florida and Tennessee. And Tennessee's down, and its defense has major issues. But you blow out Florida and Tennessee back-to-back, no matter where those programs are, that's going to get people a little more excited at Missouri. If you go in and whip up on Vanderbilt as well, then you're bowl eligible, and people are talking about, hey, 7-5, which at Missouri, considering the preseason expectations, you'll take it. And, yeah, putting up some points on Georgia, I think, started to make them feel better, and they've continued to build on it. So while other teams have tanked as the season has gone along, including the teams that they've beaten the last couple of weeks, Missouri has thrived. It doesn't mean that Missouri's at Georgia's level or at a championship level, but it's at a much higher level than a lot of people expected just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, sure, at 5-5. And Vandy, you know, is staring an Ofer right in the face here. You know, I think they certainly are very capable of losing this game. I do believe they'll be an underdog at Tennessee as well. So they're looking at, you know, they with all the teams that are below the line, they might get in again on RPI as far as a bowl game if they can split these two games. But it's more likely they go 0-8 in the SEC. Again, though, nobody's talking about Derek Mason. I mean, nobody talks about Vanderbilt, but nobody's talking about how does Derek Mason get a pass if, in fact, they end up going Ofer?
Well, that's a fair question because while Vanderbilt is not a major program among the Power Five, it should be better than this. And you know, think about just the early part of the season. I mean, compared to Missouri, in fact. Missouri only took a few games for the look to be really bad for where the season was headed, and they've turned things around. Well, Vanderbilt, remember, was coming off that win over Kansas State and how big of a deal that was at the time. And here we are, Vanderbilt still looking for its first SEC win, is not expected to get it against Missouri, and there's a chance that Vanderbilt-Tennessee game next week is between 2-0-7 teams.
Right.
Who thought that was going to happen? So that's where it is right now for Vanderbilt, and that's where it is for the bottom of the SEC. It's a bad look, but that's where it is realistically for the conference. But you know, with Derek Mason, he had a nice finish to last season, beat Tennessee. You can go 1-7. That's not great, but yeah, that could get you in, and you're 1-7 to hand Tennessee its worst record in school history. That might be enough to get a nice little celebration, even if that means you're missing a bowl game or at least not going 6-6.
Right.
But that would also probably apply some pressure next year for Derek Mason and Vanderbilt because as low as the expectations are, they're not going to allow that to continue. You can't just bounce around to 5-7, hope to trend up at 6-6. Forever. At some point, they'll move on and do something else.
Ole Miss is 5-5. They got A&M in there. I mean, this is a pink slip bowl game here. I think Kevin Sumlin's dead man coaching anyway. But if Ole Miss were to win this game or next week, say they get to 6-6, if they can win the Egg Bowl, you know what I mean? Or even if they win this game and drop next week and end up 6-6, does Matt Luke, I mean, do they take a look and say, well, wait a minute, we're not going to be bowl eligible. We don't have our final penalties in place yet from the NCAA. Does Matt Luke get a chance? Do they give him a 2-year deal or some kind of a deal to see if he can kind of guide them out of the morass? Or are they out there looking for somebody big time to come in there right now?
Yeah, I think they're looking for a new coach. I don't think Matt Luke should be the head coach there at Ole Miss. Now, if you went out, that'd be a tremendous finish, and I think he's done just about everything you can realistically expect him to do this year, considering the circumstance, considering how he had to take over. I just don't think it's realistic. As big of a challenge the next coach is going to face there, I think there will be a next coach. I think Ole Miss will go in a different direction. And you know, it's easy for them to let it ride out however it does. If A&M loses this weekend, though, then do we get something on Sunday on Kevin Sumlin? Is that – because we're all expecting and anticipating, or I think everybody is, for this to be it for him. If you lose to Ole Miss with an interim coach, could that cause Texas A&M to say, okay, enough's enough heading into the final week? I don't know. We'll see. That, to me, is what is very intriguing about this matchup, is of how it affects the timing of Kevin Sumlin's departure.
Yeah. Josh Ward with us, SEC Insider. All right, some of the places that, well, and before we get to another, you know, the jobs that we know are open, what about Arkansas, man? I mean, Jeff Long exits. This is not good for Brett Bielema. There are going to be a couple of Big Ten openings possibly for him up there. Some people say, boy, he'd be great at Illinois if Lovie Smith doesn't make the cut there. And then you knew it was coming. Gus Malzahn's name started surfacing. Big money people in Arkansas bring Gus home. And, you know, of course, Gus with all his roots in Arkansas handicapped that Arkansas gig opening and then the possibility that they would actually be able to lure Gus Malzahn out of the cauldron that is the state of Alabama. And, you know, every week he's either up or down or up or down. He's going to get fired. He's not going to get fired. Now he's the most sought-after guy. And then a week ago that he was on the hot seat.
You know what's funny is that Arkansas is in a position where next week it's probably pulling for Gus Malzahn to lose.
Yeah.
The coach that it wants, it wants its potential coach to lose so that he's less coveted because he's the guy that Arkansas covets. I mean, it's a funny dynamic. Obviously, it makes sense in that that would either cause Auburn to want him out, or there would then be criticism again of Gus Malzahn, and he could say, enough already. If there's a chance to go back to Arkansas and to get out of there at Auburn, where they may be happy this week, and Gus Malzahn's not going to try to lose. He's going to try to beat Alabama and keep on. I mean, Auburn's in a really good position right now, and if it beats Alabama, let's see what happens. But if Auburn loses, then he's going to hear it, and he's not going to like it, and he shouldn't like it. That was a big win over Georgia, and really impressive how they handled the Bulldogs. So this year is so much different than it was a year ago. There was such little movement. This year, I mean, we could be looking at close to half the league changing coaches. And we could potentially see some of the same coaches show up in Hoover, Alabama, just representing different schools this upcoming year. Maybe not, but that is a real possibility with Dan Mullen being linked to SEC jobs as well. Let's see what happens.
All right, so that takes us to Tennessee. The groomers just won't let up, it seems like. I mean, are people going to be okay when it's not John Gruden up there? Because it's not going to be John Gruden up there. And, you know, groomering apparently is a thing now, checking John Gruden rumors and groomers and all that kind of stuff. They do realize that that's not happening, right? They're going to be okay when it's somebody else, aren't they?
Yeah, I think most people do. I mean, there have been so many rumors and different things posted on message boards that were just flat out untrue, not even close to being accurate, but people believe because they want to. But we've seen this before. It happened 5 years ago. I think it's been amped up this time. Mm-hmm. But we've seen it before where fans got their hopes up for John Gruden, and then somebody else was introduced, and they got excited about that coach too with Butch Jones. And there's a very real chance that the next coach Tennessee hires comes in with a better resume than Butch Jones did. Now, this is round two, and as I said, this one's been amped up. So there'll be some fans that are upset that it's not going to be John Gruden, even though it wasn't going to be John Gruden. You and I talked about this probably more than a month ago when it first started to at least be brought up, and said, no, it's not going to happen. So, I've had fans get mad at me for saying, no, it's not going to happen. So I don't even know who or what exactly they're mad. They're just, you know, they're mad because of where Tennessee's football program has been. But to wrap it back up, I think easily the majority of Tennessee fans will come together and get excited for the next coach, no matter who that is. But some, yes, will be upset that it's not John Gruden, even though it wasn't going to be John Gruden.
Are you hearing any other names that aren't the obvious suspects that everybody seems to want to talk about?
Well, yeah, the obvious names, Dan Mullen, Scott Frost, Mike Norvell, names like that. Then you hear long-shot candidates like Jimbo Fisher, which I'm skeptical of.
Yeah.
His name's also been linked to Texas A&M. An interesting name that I just don't think will work out timing-wise is Doug Marrone, who has been an assistant coach at Tennessee, and I think in the past has coveted that job. But he's coaching the Jacksonville Jaguars, and the Jaguars have a really good chance to win the AFC South. And the regular season goes through the end of December. Well, Tennessee's going to have a coach in place before that. So in a different year, it might have worked out to pull something like that off. Right now, I don't think that can happen. So I think it starts with Dan Mullen. That's where a lot of the conversation will go. Scott Frost has been a name that would be really interesting. And then let's see if another dark horse emerges, because John Curry, Tennessee's athletic director, does everything he can to keep this search close to the vest. And he's done a very good job of keeping things tight-lipped to this point.
Can they take a chance, though, with a Scott Frost or a Norvell? I mean, can they go back to the Party of Five to get a coach, or do they have to? I just don't know if that's going to, you know, satisfy the fans.
I would probably disappoint a lot of fans. A lot of fans want a Power Five coach, somebody that's proven. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. They shouldn't want that. But that's also often easier said than done. And if they do make a call to Dan Mullen, they do pursue him, and he ultimately declines, that could be a pretty big wake up to Tennessee. Now, it doesn't mean that the other coach wouldn't be as successful or even more, but Yeah, I mean, it's a gamble, and I think Tennessee fans are tired of that. Tennessee fans want somebody that is like Urban Meyer when he went to Ohio State, or Nick Saban when he went back to Alabama, and they think that's John Gruden. I don't think John Gruden is that much of a sure thing either, by the way. And then some want Chip Kelly, but I don't think it's going to be either of those guys, so you're in a position where you're gambling. Dan Mullen just seems like the safest gamble with still a high upside among those other candidates being discussed.
Earlier this week, Steve Spurrier said that the next coach of Florida is coaching his team right now and probably will be through a bowl game. Then he said, later tweeted that he didn't, you know, he wasn't recommending anybody for the job. A lot of people have talked about how both Chip Kelly has kicked the tires on Florida and Florida's kicked the tires on Chip Kelly. I don't see any problem coming from the SEC in terms of show cause. I mean, Chip, first of all, that date is passed. And secondly, he, you know, the NCAA said he had nothing to do with that deal. That was all, assistant. He got clipped on the old, you're responsible for your staff deal, which is legit. But what do you think about the Florida gig? Do you think it's Chip Kelly and then everybody else, or do you think he's locked in on that one?
Well, it could be, and there's been a lot of attention there. I would say don't hop all over the jump to conclusion, Matt, quite yet. I'd say Scott Strickland, just like John Curry at Tennessee and just like some other ADs that have searches that are about to come up, still going through a list of candidates, but Chip Kelly at Florida could make a lot of sense. If he wants to be in the SEC or he's willing to be in the conference, I think Florida's probably one of the first schools, maybe number one, that would make sense for him to fit in there. And for how many years now have we been talking about them trying to fix the offense? Nothing's guaranteed, but I think Chip Kelly could help fix that offense and do what Jim McElwain was not able to do, turn things around on that side of the football. But if I'm Florida, I would think strongly about other coaches like Scott Frost at Central Florida. But Florida fans would say the same thing. Why gamble when we have a sure thing out there like Chip Kelly? But you have to figure out how much does each side want each other. I do think Chip Kelly could be really successful, though, if he's Florida's coach.
All right, man. By the way, I had a guy earlier in the week that said for Tennessee, the first call that they should make is to James Franklin. I just don't see him coming back to the league. I think he's at his ultimate college job. I think he's more apt, he coached for the Packers as an assistant. I think he's more apt to look at NFL jobs down the road than take a different college job than the one he has.
Yeah, I mean, you're welcome to call James Franklin at your tennis if you're Tennessee, but you better have the second name behind his that you're going to call, because he's going to tell you no. So there's nothing wrong with checking and making sure and see, but I mean, he just got a raise. I'm sure Penn State would give him another one, and I just think he'd be happier at Penn State, at a program that's having success right now and one of the best in the country compared to Tennessee, where they're the program has been elevated over the last few years, but there's still plenty of work to be done. So I just don't see why James Franklin would leave Penn State for Tennessee.
Yeah. All right, man. Appreciate you as always. Have a wonderful weekend. I'll communicate with you during the week to see what we're going to do next week, because we will be off on Thursday and Friday. So we'll chat and see what's going to happen. But if I don't talk to you before Thanksgiving, have a great Thanksgiving holiday, man.
Yeah, same to you. Thanks as always, Tom.
All right. Thank you. There you go. So there's a lot there. In the meantime, Jabal was out of his mind because we talked NASCAR for, 3 minutes with Merrill and 4 minutes maybe with Josh Ward. He's like losing it. Do I think Jameis Winston? Can I believe Jameis Winston? No, but I couldn't believe that you're talking NASCAR during the football season. Well, it's championship weekend, okay? I'm just saying. I think we could throw it in there for a couple of minutes.
What do you want to hear about on this weekend of college football anyway that we haven't already talked about? You want to hear another Iron Bowl preview that won't happen till next week?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Well, you can't make everybody happy all the time. Sometimes you can't make anybody happy. So.
Fair enough.
I know one thing. We are open lines. Stop me if I'm lying there, T-Mac, but we are open lines now all the way until about exactly 1 hour from now. We have an hour of open. Am I lying?
You're correct.
An hour of open. Yeah. Let's set some kind of a record or something. I hate it. I got open lines on a day when we got lousy games. They're not lousy games. They all count, man. You can win tickets to the Havoc. You can get on the big board where you can. We are playing for the Grand Trifecta. Whoever gets the most points is getting the VIP package at the Music City Bowl. Club seats, tailgate party, parking, battle of the bands. Two tickets to the coaches' luncheon at the Opryland Hotel. With the teams and the coaches, you mingle with the teams at the luncheon. It's a $600 prize. Music City Bowl is Friday, December 29th. The luncheon is on Thursday. The game is at 3:30 in the afternoon. I mean, you know, plenty of time to get back home if that's what you want to do, or stay in Nashville for the holiday weekend. You kidding me? All right, we got Wolverine Dan +6.5 at Badger Larry. LSU -15.5 at UT. The Eagles -3.5 at the Cowboys. That gets you a point. Everybody who hits the trifecta gets a point. Here's the twist. For an additional point, stand alone, even if you don't get the trifecta, this week's twist is I'll give you a point if you can give me the NASCAR champion. Remember, there's only four guys that can win it, so it's a 1-in-4 shot. Brad Keselowski, number 2. Kevin Harvick, number 4. Kyle Busch, number 19. Martin Truex Jr., number 78. The last two are Toyotas. First two are Fords. Okay? It's that. And, of course, if you hit them both, you get 2 points. And the lead is 3 on the board right now. Somebody's got to separate. Open lines when we come back. This is the Tom Abraham Show. 730-1039. Yeah.